We were talking to Lindsay Hilsum of Channel 4 News in Beirut earlier. She was telling us about how people in Lebanon are coping weeks into the invasion and bombing of their country by Israel. Another 21 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike in the north of the country yesterday, the first time that part of the country has been hit. Israel says it's targeting Hezbollah, who have been firing rockets into northern Israel for over a year, and that it's continuing to target Hamas in Gaza, where more people have been killed in Israeli bombings in the last 24 hours, including 10 people queuing for food at a refugee camp, according to Palestinian medics. How long can Israel continue to fight a war on two fronts, and will they face any international restraint? Vincent Durack is with us. He's Associate Professor in Middle East Politics at University College Dublin. Vincent Durack, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
A war on two fronts. What is Israel's likely endgame, in your view?
It's difficult to see at the moment. The stated objectives of both wars, I think, have been set out fairly clearly, in the sense that, you know, we know what Netanyahu has described as the war objectives in Gaza: the dismantling of Hamas and, you know, the removal of any threat from that territory to Israel for the foreseeable future. And similarly, in relation to South Lebanon, the goal, as we understand it, is to ensure the return of some 60,000 Israelis who've been forced to flee Hezbollah missile and drone attacks over the course of the last 12 months. And in order to do that, they deem it necessary to establish a sort of buffer zone in South Lebanon. But quite how achievable any of this is, and whether or not Netanyahu has an interest in bringing this conflict to an end anytime soon, you know, raises a whole set of other questions.
A buffer zone north and south of Israel. International agencies are reporting that Israel's prime minister is looking at what's called a general's plan. What is that?
Yeah, it's really quite an appalling vista, to coin a phrase. The suggestion here is that a plan which has been put together by retired IDF generals to give the people of northern Gaza, some 400,000 people who are there at the moment, two options: one, to leave, or the other, to remain and face the threat of essentially starvation, deprivation of food and other resources, in what would be an extraordinarily egregious breach of international humanitarian law, to say the very least. And the very fact that such a possibility is even been contemplated, even in need of rebuttal by the Israelis, says an awful lot about the extent to which this current Israeli government is, it seems, willing to go.
What international restraints are there on Israel now?
Very few, it would seem, right now, Gavin, to be perfectly frank. I mean, there's talk, as we know, of, you know, the review of the EU's position, the association agreement with which governs EU trade with Israel. That seems doomed on the basis of divisions within European capitals. And while on the one hand, the US, the Biden administration, Kamala Harris, talked the talk of, you know, restraint and the need for respect for international law, et cetera, on the other hand, as we know, the US has been the prime political, but also crucially military supporter of Israel in this in these two conflicts.
Yes, and that recent move by the US to provide more military aid to Israel, but has it to some extent exposed a vulnerability in Israel's defences? Sorry, Vincent, go ahead.
No, it certainly seems to be a move that is motivated by fear that there is that vulnerability. You know, thus far, without minimising the damage done and the loss of life, damage and loss of life occasioned by Hezbollah rocket and drone attacks has been comparatively limited, certainly not remotely comparable to what's been happening on the other side in Lebanon or in Gaza. But the fact that a significant percentage, some say perhaps 20% of Hezbollah drones have evaded Israeli air defences is troubling for people living in the north. Haifa in particular has been targeted, and the US moved to send sophisticated anti-ballistic missile weaponry to Israel, and indeed US military personnel to work these is indicative of that fear of vulnerability on that front.
Our political correspondent Micheál Lehane reporting this morning that government party leaders have been told by the Attorney General here that there is now a new context to examine the occupied territory bills, and that there may be a legal case around this. Could the Irish government be in a position to do more then?
Well, I think so, to the extent that this move would clearly represent another attempt by the Irish government to set the agenda, if you like, within Europe on how the EU responds to what's happening in the region at the moment. In and of itself, I'm sure that any move to legislate for the Occupied Territories Bill would be dismissed in Israel as yet another example of Irish hostility to Israel. Whether or not it would, you know, generate further debate at European level is, I think, the big question.
Ultimately, the only country likely to exert any considerable influence on Israel is the US, who is facing a presidential election in a few weeks' time. Could that change anything?
I'm not really sure it will. I may be wrong. It would be nice to think that it might do. But it is difficult to see any significant shift in the orientation of the US towards Israel or towards, say, the twin conflicts in Gaza and in Lebanon, regardless of whether Donald Trump is elected or whether Kamala Harris is successful. Kamala Harris clearly has articulated perhaps a more nuanced, a more careful position in terms of the need for Israel to observe the niceties of international law, although that, of course, has fallen on deaf ears. But whether that would be, in the event of her being elected, whether that would be accompanied by any actual sanction on Israel for breach of international law is very difficult to see.
Vincent Dura, thank you for speaking with us. Vincent is Associate Professor in Middle East Politics at University College Dublin.